We're live and we're local. This is a Juno afternoon on Wednesday, August 29th. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. On today's show, we'll hear about Friday's Meet the Candidates event at the Diamond Park Fieldhouse. Planners and architects will outline downtown Juno's area plan, Blueprint Juno. We'll preview Sunday's concert with cellist Zewel Bailey. And Tracy K. Smith, United States Poet Laureate, will be here towards the end of the show. Those interviews, national native news, bird note, music, and more right here on a Juno afternoon. Weather for the rest of today, mostly sunny with a high near 64. Tonight, cloudy with lows around 45. Tomorrow, rain likely, mainly after 4 p.m. Chance of precipitation is 60%.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Navajo voters picked two seasoned politicians for tribal president after Tuesday's primary election. Vice President Jonathan Nez and past president Joe Shirley Jr. were the top vote-getters. Unofficial results show Nez with more than 14,000 votes and Shirley with nearly half that. 18 people were on the ballot for the leadership job, including current president Russell Begay, who came in fifth. Nez credits grassroots support for helping boost his campaign. Shirley, in social media posts, said, "It's not about coming in number one or two in primaries. It's just about making it." The career politicians will pick running mates and face off in November. In Tuesday's primary in Oklahoma, Tahlequah Mayor Jason Nichols secured the Democratic nomination for Oklahoma's 2nd Congressional District. He'll challenge incumbent Republican Congressman Mark Wayne Mullen for the seat in November. Both men are citizens of the Cherokee Nation. South Dakota's Department of Corrections says the state penitentiary is going through a shortage of donated firewood that's having an impact on sweat lodge ceremonies normally scheduled about six times a week. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
Because of the lack of firewood, inmates are going weeks without the sweat lodge ceremonies at the penitentiary. Prison chapel volunteer Mary Montoya says the donations have trickled to the slowest rate in her 20 years of service. Firewood is usually donated to the penitentiary by the city of Sioux Falls and community members. The purification ceremonies help to reduce tension among the inmates at the maximum security prison in Sioux Falls. The penitentiary's cultural activities program manager, Tammy Mertens-Jones, says some inmates replace the sweat lodge ritual with a pipe ceremony. But she says that compares to someone saying the rosary instead of attending church. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellen Bolt.
The Ponca Tribe of Nebraska this week announced the name of its casino, which is being built on the Iowa-Nebraska border, and plans for its opening by late October, despite legal challenges. State and local governments have a lawsuit in federal court to try and stop it. The tribe says the Prairie Flower Casino will create jobs and boost the economy. In a press release, the tribe says the gaming facility is on sovereign land in Carter Lake, Iowa. At more than 9,000 square feet, it will feature slot machines only. The Macaw Nation in Washington, which has long fought to exercise whaling rights, celebrated a harvest last week after a humpback was hit by a ship. The Seattle Times reports it was found by fishermen and was studied by biologists before community members butchered it for a feast. A hunt has not happened for years as the tribe works through court. The harvest was seen as a gift as it happened before annual Macaw Days, which celebrates culture with other tribes and Canadian First Nations. The Cape Cod Times reports the Mashpee Wampanoag tribe is expected to hear a decision in September about its trust land. The Massachusetts tribe has been fighting to keep its 2015 land into trust approval by the Interior Department. Neighbors opposing the tribe's casino project challenged it in court. Tribes across the country are closely watching, worried a move to take land out of trust could impact future decisions in Indian Country. The owner of jewelry stores in Old Town Albuquerque was sentenced in New Mexico Tuesday for violating the Indian Arts and Crafts Act. Niall Ali pleaded guilty to two felony charges for selling counterfeit Native American jewelry as Indian-made. He was sentenced to 6 months in prison and ordered to pay more than $9,000 in restitution. The case stems from 2015 when federal investigators cracked down on a number of jewelry stores in Albuquerque, Gallup, Santa Fe, a production shop in Zuni, and a store in California. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is by Odawi Law Group, provider of Indian Law Solutions, and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite System.
For Native Americans affected by domestic violence, the Strong Hearts Native Helpline offers peer-to-peer support and resources. It's safe, confidential, and toll-free at 844-7-NATIVE. Program support by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center. Support by Freedom Lodge, presenting Body and Earth, the future of Native wellness, with leaders including Judge Abby Avenante, sharing wisdom which protects our lives and lands at Mystic Lake Casino. Registration through September 12th at bodyandearth.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my first guests today are Genevieve McLaughlin and Joy Lyon. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah. Joy, you're the executive director of AEYC, Association for the Education of Young Children. Genevieve, you're the Juno Outreach Coordinator. Yes. And you're both here today to talk about your Meet the Candidates event coming up on Friday. But to begin, would you please tell us a bit about what AEYC does here in Juneau and Southeast?
Yes, thanks. AEYC promotes high-quality early learning for all children birth to age 8. And we do that by supporting parents as a very important first teacher. And we support early educators and early childhood programs in all their different forms. And then we also do community events like this to really engage the whole community into stepping up and making sure that we're doing right by our youngest children. So we have different programs, such as for parents, we have the Parents as Teachers program. That's a home visiting program. We host the Community Imagination Library, where kids get a book in the mail from the time they're born until they turn 5, which is really fabulous and lots of great support from the community.
That's a lot of books.
And we do a lot of different family engagement activities around early literacy as well. And for early educators, we work with THREAD, which is our statewide partner. And we are just starting to do the child care assistance program to help parents be able to afford child care and also connect them with a statewide referral, free referral service to find child care. You know, they're kind of like hidden around the community. You know where your elementary schools are, but there are like 30 different early childhood programs for child care that, you know, you don't know where they are, what they offer. They're very different. And so THREAD has a free referral service that we offer in Juneau and Southeast. And then we also do lots and lots of work with the early childhood programs. We have training, 120 hours of training throughout the year that's offered evenings and weekends to really bring everybody up to speed on child development and all the wealth of things you need to know working with young children.
And Genevieve, as outreach coordinator, what are some of your roles at AEYC? I know you wear many hats.
It's putting on events like this, Come Meet Your Candidates, and the get the kids out to vote. So a lot of everything that goes hand in hand with what Joy just said.
And this Friday, AEYC will be coordinating the meet and greet between members of the community and candidates for CBJ Assembly and School Board at the Diamond Park Fieldhouse. What motivated your organization to put on this event? How did it come about?
You know, we've always done a lot around advocacy, maybe more at the state and national level. And this is our opportunity with we've been working with a group of leaders in the community around a solution, a blueprint for solving this child care crisis that we have in Juneau. And so that didn't get on the ballot. The city assembly, a minority of members on the city assembly, did not choose to put it on the ballot for the voters to be able to engage with that question. So we really decided that we'll focus our efforts on really informing voters on which of the candidates really support working families and really want to move forward into solving our child care problem. And then really getting the voters out to vote. So getting the candidates also up to speed as whoever steps into the assembly and school board positions. We really want them to have a good background on what the situation is so that on day one in the, you know, should they be elected, they're ready to go. They understand the issues. They've heard from parents. You know, it's kind of like, you know, every time there's an election, there's a whole new group of people that may or may not know what the issues are. So this is our opportunity, making it really really easy and fun for parents to get engaged because we know parents are very busy. And so it's hard for them to have the time to sit down and think about, and, well, there are a lot of candidates for one, you know, for our city election this year. Not somebody maybe on the school board, which they don't have a lot of competition there, but for our city assembly members and mayor, there are a lot of choices, and it's hard for parents to find the time to connect with them or find out from them, you know, what their stand is on issues. So this is a way to make it really easy, fun, bring them to the field house. Genevieve can talk about all the door prizes and pizza and, you know, the different equipment we have for kids out there. The Turf for Tots program is run every Monday through Friday there for child care programs and Head Start. And thanks to the CBJ Youth Activities Fund, that's no charge to those programs. And then we also have family fun nights at the field house throughout the winter. So this is kind of the kickoff one, the very first one.
All right. So getting back to the meeting the candidates, what's the format for this event?
We have cards for parents. So when parents come, they'll be able to register to vote, for one. We have two people there that are just all set up to register people to vote. And this will be the last chance to register to vote. You know, we have registrars that are able to do that in time to be able to vote in the city election. They need to have registered by the 2nd. And this kind of is the last chance in Juneau. Mm-hmm. So unless you go online and quickly do it tomorrow or the next day. So they'll be able to register. Then we'll give them a card with a kind of a bingo card, if you will.
Oh, where, is that what you've got right there?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll be able to, they'll be able to see the list of all the candidates.
Oh, this is
interesting. And then as they go around, there'll be kind of like a speed dating process where the candidates will be set up, you know, and the parents can go and share their story and listen to what the candidate has to say about what ideas they have. And then, you know, kind of rate your candidate.
Will they be supportive? Will the interactions be timed?
We're figuring people are going to time themselves.
Okay.
And, you know, so if little groups form, you know, that's all good. Yeah, we won't be like being monitoring that. And we know that while a lot of times, you know, people come with a friend and, you know, one person can be, you know, interacting with the kids while the other adult is doing the talking with the candidates. So it makes it very easy to a nice flow of time there.
So you can there's a list here. You get a checklist almost of mm-hmm. people, and you can mark them as a champion or supportive or unsupportive of I guess whatever it is that you want to know. And, yeah, quite a list of people here. Will all of them be there at your event?
Most of them have responded that they will be there. So we will not everyone is going to be able to make it, of course, but the majority, the vast majority of the candidates will be there. So it's a one-stop shop, easy opportunity for families with children, especially birth to 5. Because we really want those candidates to have the opportunity, too, to hear from parents their stories. And, you know, either parents are working or they're, you know, just trying to catch up with their family life. So it's hard for them to get out to, say, an assembly meeting or, you know, some of the other events that are going on. It's really hard to bring children to. So this is the best event that young parents of young children have to really get out there. And in an hour and a half, they really have gotten to meet all the candidates on for the city offices.
Yeah, you've made it very easy. They'll all be there in one place, and it starts at 5 o'clock, and it's at the Field House, Diamond Park Field House, so there'll be something for the kiddos to do. It's on a Friday evening. And you've also got some other temptations as well.
Right. We don't want to forget that it is also a pizza night. Mitch over at Bullwinkle's has generously helped supporting this event as well. We'll have a $100 door prize for a pizza party also.
Wow.
From Bullwinkle's. So door prizes and, again, the great play equipment. So come out and, yeah, come have dinner and meet your candidates, get informed, find out how they plan on to increase capacity of childcare for working families. And it'll be a great
fun event.
We might have to have a rule that you have to have a child with you on Rage 5, because this is going to be so much fun. We're gonna have a good turnout.
We have, we have a lot of big kids, too.
We have over 100 parents that have responded, too. So we think there's going to be a great turnout for all around.
And just quickly, why should people care about childcare in Juneau? You described it as a crisis. What is the crisis? What's the issue?
The McDowell Group did a study, and over 500 families are limited in being able to work here in Juneau. And we know Juneau has some of the highest cost of living in the state. So for a family with young children, it is really difficult to find childcare. There's only one space for every five children under age five that need childcare. And it's just one of the biggest stressors for families right now, and it's causing families to move away. We just talked to a mom out in the lobby here that's going to be moving away because they just can't make it work. So we know that state jobs can move up to Anchorage if we can't fill them, and employers are really concerned because they can see that it's hard for them to recruit and retain a steady workforce that doesn't have access to childcare. So we have a blueprint to really move forward in addressing this, and we feel like that, the whole community getting on board and engaged, and you can't solve every problem in Juneau, but this is one that we feel has a really strong, solid plan to move us forward that will have so many great economic returns immediately and long term.
Well, thank you very much, Joy and Genevieve from AEYC, for being here today. The event, again, is this Friday, August 31st, 2018, from 5 to 6:30 at the Diamond Park Fieldhouse. You can call if you have questions, 789-1235. And you've got another vote coming up in next month called Kids Vote, and we will have to talk about that one next time. But Joy and Genevieve, thank you so much for being here today.
Good luck on Friday.
Have fun. Thanks.
Sweet child. Alaska Clean Harbors invites boating locals to help keep our waters clean and our wildlife healthy by using pump outs, scooping your pup's poop, and putting waste in its proper place. Find out more and get a free pump out adapter for your boat at alaskacleanharbors.org. This message brought to you with funding from the United States Fish and Wildlife Service Clean Vessel Act through the Alaska Clean Water Actions Program. Support comes from Schmock Mechanical Contractors. Schmock installs and maintains boilers and furnaces, heat pumps, air conditioning, water solutions, and more with 24-hour emergency repair. Schmock Mechanical for home or commercial plumbing, heating, and appliance needs. 907-500-7065.
It is 21 minutes after the hour. This is a Juneau Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney, and my next guests are here from the City and Borough of Juneau Community Development Department. We've got a full house in the studio. Would you please introduce yourselves and maybe your title or affiliation?
Yeah, hi. This is Zane Jones from MRV Architects and the consultant team for the project.
Hi, I'm Laura Boyce, a senior planner with the Community Development Department at the CBJ.
And my name's Tim Felsett. I'm also one of the planners at CBJ.
And you're all here to talk about Blueprint Downtown, also known as Downtown Juneau's Area Plan. What is it? What's the plan?
The plan is essentially, it's a 20-year long-term vision for the downtown, and it's going to be an action-oriented strategy for where we want the downtown to go in the next 20 years.
And Laura, you'd mentioned earlier that it's an area plan, similar to the one similar to the Lemon Creek area plan, but I don't quite understand what that is. Can you describe it a little bit more?
Sure. Two recent plans we've done. We completed the Lemon Creek area plan last year, and then prior to that it was the Auk Bay area plan. And they are specific 10 to 20-year plans for those areas for how they want to grow, how they want to be. It involves capital improvement projects to help get the community where it wants to be. It addresses concerns people have in the area. Am I missing anything, Tim?
No, and I guess those plans cover multiple themes as well. So it looks at housing issues. It looks at transportation issues. It looks at some of the recreational issues as well, how people want to maybe preserve some of the natural environment. That was certainly important in the Lemon Creek plan. So, you know, there's multiple planning themes that run through those area plans.
Okay, thank you. That helps. And so now there's one for downtown Juneau. I know that it's kind of in the early stages, but some of it is centered around projects that are already planned or confirmed or in progress. And then, can you talk a little bit about that? Will there be like a centerpiece structure or space that's part of the vision?
Well, I don't think it's going to get to the stage where we're looking at certain architectural features in the downtown area. That might certainly be a recommendation that might come out. We have a number of other plans that already talk about this broader downtown area. So, for example, in the Willoughby plan, there is talk about having public open spaces, and public open spaces are going to be some of the things that we'll be talking about at our kickoff meeting tomorrow. Yeah, we're really going to be trying to take a lot of the information that's in these existing plans, and I think there's over 20 or so existing plans that are relevant to the downtown area. We're going to be looking at that as a project team, and then with the public input, trying to understand what we're missing. Are there any gaps, and are there any other great ideas that we need to supplement?
Yes, tomorrow evening the public is invited to come and share ideas and help build the community vision. That's what you guys are here to talk about today and promote. And also online right now on KTOO's Facebook page, we have a map of the area plan. Is that a good description of it?
Yes. So the map you have,
yes, there we go.
For downtown Juneau, we're starting off with a broad area. It's essentially from Norway Point down to the rock dump. And then, of course, through the process, we'll hear from people about the areas they care about and where they want to focus on. And through this planning effort, this visioning effort, we'll address those specific areas and see exactly where we go. But we're starting very broad, Norway Point to the rock dump.
What are you hoping to hear from the public?
Yeah, maybe I jump in. The design team, we've got a good bunch. We've got Barb Scheinberg from Scheinberg & Associates has been doing this for years, as well as MRV Architects. And we've got Pat Race with Lucid Revelry, or most people know it from Alaska Robotics. So some great characters from downtown, and then combine that with CBJ's community development program. And we want to get a vision from the community as the first step in this. So it's really just a listening session and getting people's opinions. And you mentioned like an architectural feature or something like that. I think we're going to shy away from those and try to get into something more like character, placemaking, kind of an identity, and get what people really care about, what they want to see, especially with businesses downtown, residences downtown. How do we want to mix those? How do we want to take those to the next level? Is what the public's going to give us feedback on, and then we're going to take that as a next step into more technical things that will give the city tools to work with.
So that's tomorrow at 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the Jack. And will there be any type of presentation, or will you just start taking questions right away?
You bet. Maybe I jump in again there. I think community development will give a overview of the project and help us understand what it is. And then we're going to essentially split up into some tables that have different topics that you can pick your one that you care most about and give us feedback on. We've got some refreshments, of course, so nobody gets hungry or hangry, as they call it. And it's going to be one of those that we've got some maps up, some places you can put some stickers on and leave your ideas for downtown that you care about.
This is the kickoff meeting. Will there be others to follow?
Yes. The information gathered from tomorrow's meeting will be presented next on October 30th. And then there'll be another meeting following that in January. And this is the visioning piece that the consultants are on board for, the first piece of this project. And it's an overall 18 to 24-month process.
What do the three of you, either speaking for yourselves or speaking for your department, what's your vision for downtown Juneau? What do you see in 20 years?
That's a hard one.
Yeah, that's a loaded question. That's great. Maybe I'll start and just say that I think the past 5 years even, there's been tremendous change and kind of a exuberance with young businesses coming in, and I think that's a really great fertile area, is bringing in these newer businesses, young entrepreneurs, and helping them grow and kind of take the reins. We've got some good businesses that are established, and I think those need to, of course, be taken care of. But I like the excitement that downtown has kind of started to bring in the last 5 years.
How about you, Laura?
I'm looking forward to hearing what people have to say tomorrow night.
Is there anything you don't want to hear from the public, except for my comments about architecture?
No, we want to hear everything. We want to be able to address as many concerns as we can through this effort, because it's everybody's plan.
Yeah. How about you, Tim?
Yeah, I really support Zane's comments that there has been a change in downtown, and I think this plan is really one of the elements is trying to see how we can keep fostering what's happened over the last few years, what support structure can the city and private businesses start to create to keep fostering that additional housing downtown, dealing with issues like transit, how do we move people in and out of town. They're all really big issues that we need to try and address, and hopefully we can get to our downtown utopia.
All right. Well, if you want to weigh in, come to the Jack tomorrow night, 6:30 to 8 p.m., and you can interact with these three in person and others and put in your input. So Zane and Laura and Tim, thank you very much for being here today. Is there anything else you want to add?
Yes, we have a project website where you can go and find out more information, stay up to date on the project, as well as send us your email so you can stay in touch with us. And that is www.blueprintjuno.org.
All right.
Anything else?
Oh, thank you guys so much for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
We hope to see you tomorrow night.
I believe you will.
Looking forward to it.
We built this city. We built this city on rock and roll. We built this city. We built this city on rock.
Polar bears are in danger of going extinct, but in Kaktovik, there's a different problem. Too many bears. As the sea ice melts, polar bears are spending more time on land and in town. On the next Midnight Oil, the polar bears of Kaktovik and the thousands of tourists who come to see them every year. Available Thursday at ktoo.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
This broadcast is sponsored in part by Foodland Pharmacy, now open Monday through Saturday at the Foodland IGA in downtown Juneau. Foodland Pharmacy is locally owned and operated, and prescription refill requests and orders are welcome. More information at 796-2280.
Jazz and Classic presents Juno favorite Zool Bailey and Friends in a special evening for four cellos at the Jack, September 2nd. Favorites by Bach, Bruch, Couperin, and Schumann, and a vintage mix of classics and rock by contemporary composer and cellist Patrick Laird. Tickets at Halfside, the Jack, or jazzandclassics.org. Celebrate the Labor Day weekend, Sunday, September 2nd at 7, Zool and his friends, and cello times 4.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. It's about 26 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm Shelley Delaney, and my next guest is calling in from Sitka. Hello to the great Zool Bailey.
I'm actually calling in from Sandpoint, Idaho.
Oh, I'm sorry about that, but you live in Sitka. Is that correct?
Well, I run a music festival, the Sitka Summer Music Festival in Sitka, as well as the Sitka International Cello Seminar, which is what we're kind of celebrating on this tour. So I basically live in Sitka during the summer months.
Oh, that's wonderful. Do you spend the summer performing or just, you know, working on the festival, or do you do anything else fun down there?
Sure. I hit Sitka in May, and then the festival runs all of June. And then for 3 weeks in July is the Sitka International Cello Seminar. And then I run back down to the lower 48, do some touring, then come right back up and play in the rest of Alaska. We tour, the Sitka Festival tours as a part of our joint efforts with the Juno Jazz and Classics, as well as the Anchorage Autumn Classics that we have hosted for decades now. So I'm slowly working my way north. And I'll be in Juneau, of course, this weekend, and then I'll be in Anchorage for 3 weeks after that.
Wow. Thank you so much for visiting Alaska so often. It's great to have musicians who take the time and trouble to come up here.
It's my pleasure. I was invited in 2007, not ever knowing that the paradise of Alaska would become part of the fabric of my life, and it's one of the greatest gifts I've ever had a part of my life, so. My pleasure.
Yes, it happens to a lot of us. And we also have Reggie Schaap here as well. Reggie, you are part of Juno Jazz and Classics. What's your role there?
I'm the executive director of Juno Jazz and Classics.
So you're the boss.
Kind of, yes.
And you're coordinating the concerts and this concert this weekend. So, Zool, as you mentioned, you'll be in Juno very soon. This weekend, in fact, for an all-cello concert. Why all cellos?
Well, this is there are many reasons why. The obvious one is that in Sitka, this international cello seminar, we bring 10 cellists who are rising stars from all over the world each summer to study in paradise of that rainforest region of Juneau and Sitka. And this is our fifth anniversary. So we wanted to celebrate that and celebrate all the things that are kind of evolving in Sitka, as well as our collaboration with the Juno Jazz and Classics. So we just basically said, celebration? Well, that sounds like celebration. We should go all out and do as much cello as we can. And I'll tell you what, we've been touring this for about 2 weeks now, and we have sold out every venue, and the audiences are going berserk. They cannot believe that the cello has the capacity to literally span every instrument and make every sound possible. So between the four of us, we're playing everything from, obviously, Bach Chacon to the Schumann Cello Concerto in a format for three cellos and solo, to a rock and roll piece by Patrick Laird called Vintage, to a bunch of other things. I mean, we have almost a set list that we go from, and we also zigzag in and out of it based on what we see the audience doing. But I haven't seen an audience reaction like this in quite some time, especially because they walk in not knowing what to expect.
Well, that sounds really exciting. I'm glad you've had such a great reception so far. I also really love Celebration. That is just so clever. So you mentioned some of the works that we'll hear. Who are some of the performers? Anybody good?
Well, but sorry, say again?
I said, who are some of the performers?
Yes. Well, my partner in crime as a pedagogue, actually probably the premier pedagogue cello-wise, Melissa Kraut, Dr. Melissa Kraut, who's also an incredible performer. She teaches at the Cleveland Institute of Music, and she was the person who helped me put together this seminar in this institute. And so she is one of the other cellists. And then we chose two of the hot shots from the past 5 years. Is Cicely Parnas, who's actually the granddaughter to the great Leslie Parnas, who was one of the first top American prize winners of the Tchaikovsky competition. So she comes from a great family of musicians, as well as Jared Blasian. And he is from just recently been studying in California and now lives in New York City, and they're both forging these wonderful careers being launched. So we thought we'll show them how it really is on the road for 3 weeks. And show them that it's a grind, but it's the first time that I've ever felt like I've been part of a band, because I always travel by myself, and we're having the time of our lives.
Oh, that's so great. I'm really glad to hear it. Well, sounds like you've got a good group of musicians with you, and you've got some good pieces to play. What motivated you to choose these selections? Do they fit some kind of theme?
Sort of. The big thing is, whenever I go to a concert, I want to hear great variety. I want to have fun. I want to see the musicians having fun. I want to experience something that I really have never experienced before. I don't know what that means, whether it be personalities or sounds or instruments. I don't believe it's normal to have four cellos sitting on stage rocking it out. So right there, I went into the catacombs and the catalogs of some of the great pieces that have been transcribed for cellos, including the Bach Chacon and the Bruch Kol Nidre, and some duos, some virtuoso duos, and but they're all from different styles. They span the last 300 years, and then of course we have to do a little bit of twisting to make sure that everyone understands that the cello can also rock it out like a rock band. So we've added a couple of things that will, again, blow people's minds.
What were some of the challenges for the musicians with these pieces?
Well, it's not really challenges. It's because cello is
too easy.
No, not at all. Not at all. First of all, everybody came very prepared. The pieces, the parts are very difficult, and so I was very pleased at the professionalism of when you get people come from all over the United States, in this case, coming together. The first rehearsal, we started reading, we started talking artistically immediately. Everybody was prepared. I think that the reason why I said it that way is, cellists just love each other. They get along. They're very community oriented. We just kind of like inspire each other with our sounds and our ideas. And that's when the challenge and the wonders is that we've been able to live and breathe this music. So by the time we get to Juno, we'll have played it, I don't know, 15 times. And when we walk out on stage, it's going to be, where our parameters, our boundaries have gotten so broad at the freedom of being able to do anything we want on stage, and the ensemble is just locked. So what I'll say in a nutshell is these days, usually people are invited in to play one concert, maybe two. The idea of touring and living and breathing with this kind of music is kind of it doesn't happen anymore. So as I said, we are in the midst of doing everything from playing the national anthem at baseball games to playing at the Highland Women's Prison up in Anchorage coming up two pop-up concerts all over the place, in addition to our concert series that we're hitting. I think what you're going to see is true excitement, a lot of spontaneity, great variety of music. Again, if the audience just shuts their eyes, they're going to be blown away by the fact that they can't believe that four cellos can make this wall of sound and the spectrum of the human voice all the way up to the highest note on the violin to the bass.
Zul, your enthusiasm is so contagious. Well, I bet people are going online and buying tickets right now.
This is a highlight of my year coming to play in Juneau as a part of the Jazz and Classics. This organization is widely known throughout the world as being a class act, and I've been bragging to my colleagues about it all summer that are coming with me. And so we're really looking forward to be there. And the audiences are also unbelievably supportive, and it's just a great night. So it's counting the minutes.
Well, I can see why you're such a favorite here in town. And Juneau Jazz and Classics is putting on this concert. Reggie, I'm looking at you. What are the details? It's Saturday night. I know that.
It's Sunday night, actually. September 2nd.
Boy, I'm just wrong all over the place.
At 7 p.m. And it's going to be at the Jack. Tickets are still available, not many of them, so you don't want to be waiting to the last minute to get your tickets. They're available at jazzandclassics.org, at the Jack box office, or at Hearthside Books.
And there's discounts available for seniors and students.
For seniors and students, yes, there are.
All right. Well, Zul, Reggie, is there anything else you want to add about Sunday's concert?
Can't wait to see you, Reggie.
Can't wait to see you either, Zul.
Been too long. Can't wait to be there. We're going to have a great time. And thank you again for having me.
Thank you so much for coming. It'll be a fun weekend, and we hope all Juneau comes and hears this fabulous music.
Thanks. And we got one of the selections from the concert coming up as your outro. But Zul and Reggie, thank you so much for your time and for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Support for KTOO comes from LifeMed Alaska, providing Alaskans with annual memberships for emergency air medical transportation within Alaska and beyond. Learn more at lifemedalaska.com.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney, and my next guest is Tracy K. Smith, the United States Poet Laureate. Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, it is a real honor for us. Tracy, we could spend a lot of time describing your work and going over your career and talking about how you got to where you are, but I think I would just like to hear you read some of your poems or some of your poetry. So will you start us off with something?
Sure. I'll start you off with a poem called An Old Story, which I think I wrote in an attempt to write a new myth, something that might be useful to our world right now. An old story. We were made to understand it would be terrible. Every small want, every niggling urge, every hate, swollen to a kind of epic wind, livid the land and ravaged like a rageful dream. The worst in us having taken over and broken the rest utterly down. A long age passed when at last we knew how little would survive us, how little we had mended or built that was not now lost. Something large and old awoke. And then our singing brought on a different manner of weather. Then animals long believed gone crept down from trees. We took new stock of one another. We wept to be reminded of such color.
Thank you very much. Wow. I love the way you talk about time, you know, it's such an abstract concept, but the way you, and outer space as well, and lots of things that makes, you know, the way you wonder about it makes me think of the way I wonder about it and the way many people wonder about it, which is why you're the poet laureate.
Well, I think that's one of the things that poetry invites us to do, you know, to, I sometimes think of it as almost like it has the same tools at its disposal as filmmakers do, but it's much more inexpensive when you're just doing it in words. So time is something that you can manipulate. You can, you know, slow it down. You can stop it. It can move in reverse. And when that happens, you get to move around and look differently and more deeply at things. You get to speculate or, you know, make prophecy about what will or must happen, which is a way of saying you get to think about outcomes about that the real world is setting into motion right now.
So you're here in Alaska, one of several states that you've visited,
right,
as part of this project, American Conversation, Celebrating Poems in Rural Communities. Would you tell us a bit about that project?
Sure. It's a project that is in part born out of the wish to do something different with public poetry events. For me, as a writer, I find that I'm mostly invited to cities where literary festivals often take place or where reading series happen on a regular basis. And I'm also invited to college campuses. And it's wonderful. I have great conversations about life and art. But I also feel like there's this huge, you know, huge country that doesn't always have that kind of programming. So it's been a real pleasure to take programs that have to do with poetry into rural communities and to talk about poems with new groups of people. I think poems give us an occasion to open up with each other. Poems remind us of the big questions that we have. Poems allow us to kind of share and revisit our main memories. And I think that's a great way of talking to a stranger. You're not talking about the weather. You're not, you know, just going through the motions, but you're really getting somewhere and you're willing, in the best of cases, to be vulnerable and deeply curious.
I understand that you went to Bethel as part of this trip.
Right.
What did you think of it? I've never been myself.
Oh, it was really beautiful. We were there yesterday. We spent the day. It was an overcast day, and it was just this incredibly beautiful, muted color spectrum of blues and greens and browns and this vast river, We got to visit a couple of villages along the river, Napakiak and Napaskiak. That S was what made it that we visited two villages instead of one, because we first made a mistake. But we got to meet some people, visit a couple of schools, and walk around and see a really beautiful pair of communities. And talking about poetry that evening in Bethel was a great cross-section, I think, of people from the villages, from Bethel, from the university. And, yeah, we got to that place of, okay, this poem makes me think of life and death and hope and wonder and loss and time. And it was really exciting.
Were you the first American poet laureate to visit Bethel?
I don't know. I suspect perhaps.
I suspect so as well. Well, that's very interesting. Yeah, I liked your quote that was part of the press release. Poetry is something that's relevant to everyone's life, whether they're habitual readers of poetry or not. That's definitely true for me. I'm certainly not the expert. But how has that been demonstrated in your time as poet laureate?
Well, I think it's really exciting to see that once people are assured that they don't need a specialized vocabulary to talk about a poem, they hear things that are meaningful to them. They find a way, and I think it's just a natural human instinct, to make the content of the poem relevant to what's on their mind or in their heart or, you know, on the surface of their memory. So I've been really excited to see poems that I've known for a little while kind of round different bends, you know, poems that are about ostensibly about love, finding ways to speak about addiction or finding ways to be useful for someone who is has been uprooted and is living in a different part of the world from what they're used to. It's been exciting.
I want to go over the details of your event before we run out of time. Then I have one last question. So the public reception is at 5 o'clock over at the Father Andrew P. Kasheriff State Library Archives and Museums. Most people know it as the APK. And that's tonight, starting at 5 o'clock. And then at 6 o'clock, there will be a poetry reading and discussion. It will also be recorded later for broadcast on 360 North, but I think everybody should come and meet you in person. So as we mentioned before, the American Conversation Celebrating Poems in Rural Communities is an anthology of 50 different living poets, American poets, 50 different outlooks on America. Would you tell us about one of the poets in the anthology and why you chose them?
Oh, sure. So American Journal is an anthology that will come out in a few weeks, and we've had the chance to kind of test it out on this visit, and we gave copies away to people, and we kind of almost used it like a hymnal or something, like turn to page 12 and let's read this poem. I'll read you a poem by a poet named Araceli Skirmay, who lives in New York, and she is of Puerto Rican and Eritrean descent. This is a poem called Second Estrangement. Please raise your hand. Whomever else of you has been a child lost in a market or a mall without knowing it at first, following a stranger, accidentally thinking he is yours, your family or parent, even grabbing for his hands, even calling the word you said then for father, only to see the face look strangely down, utterly foreign, utterly not the one who loves you, you who are suddenly a bird stunned by the glass partitions of rooms. How far the world you knew and tall and filled finally with strangers. I love the way this poem invites you to participate with that first line. Please raise your hand even before you know what you're raising it for.
I almost did.
And then it guides you through what might be a familiar experience of being lost and as a child. But the poem opens up. And I think it also speaks to moments in an adult life, in any life, where you're no longer among the people who know and love you, and that feeling of being startled. So this is one of the poems. This is the opening poem in the anthology, and I love the way that it kind of gently guides you out of what you know. And I hope that what you find when you move through American Journal is a bunch of voices who are new and welcome and will change your view of things.
Thank you. Tracy K. Smith, U.S. Poet Laureate, will be over at the APK starting at 5 p.m. tonight. Thank you so much for being on a Juno Afternoon.
Thank you.